Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So we've been watching what's happening in Israel for the past couple of days now, maybe 48 hours to be precise, and it is chilling. But you've been seeing scores and scores of people, civilians, really take to the streets, and they have had it. They want government to do something about hostages. On the line with us, a director of Israel Committee Against House Demolitions, Jeff Halper, who we've spoken to before. Thank you very much, Jeff, for making time for us. Good evening and welcome. And let me just confirm, you are talking to us from Israel as we speak. Jeff, good evening and welcome. Can you hear us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, now we can hear you loud and clear. I just wanted to be clear that are we speaking to you from Israel? Are we in Israel at the moment?
In Israel, I'm sure. So there's a question with...
Oh. I don't know, that line is failing us. Jeff, are you able to hear us? I think you are also, we can hear you, but I don't know if you can hear us clearly. Jeff, should we try another time?
Yep.
Can you hear us? I'm going to just give it one last shot. Jeff, are you able to hear us? All right. What we'll do is...
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, fantastic. I was just saying, we've been watching protests on the streets in Israel. People really concerned about the hostages. And maybe just give us better context as to why exactly civilians are on the streets.
Well, first of all, it's not political, in a sense. Mm. It's a humanitarian issue. You know, and that's in a way a problem because it's deflecting attention from the real issue that should be before us, which is Gaza and the ongoing genocide. The hostage issue is a tragic one, but it's more of a humanitarian one. So that the people on the streets are not on the streets because they oppose the war in Gaza or they want a ceasefire. They're in the streets because they want the hostages released. That's it. And you're furious at Netanyahu because they feel that he is, and they're right, he is torpedoing every chance to get an agreement because he wants to remain in office. It's a completely personal agenda. And that's what's outraging them. Not that there's a genocide going in Gaza, nothing like that. It's simply the hostages. And so... in a way, the hostages, in a way, have hijacked, you know, the issue of Gaza. Everybody's looking now at the hostages, and nobody's looking at the ongoing genocide.
I mean, obviously, this tension is not something that Netanyahu would like to have. He did give a deadline saying that, you know, they need to stop. What's the mood like right now as we speak in Israel?
The mood is very bad, you know, especially after those six... people were killed yesterday. The hostages were killed yesterday. It's a very bad mood here. But again, it's anger at Netanyahu because everybody knows that he's just holding up this Philadelphia deal. You know, this the border between Egypt and Gaza that seems to be his sacred. You know, so sacred that he can't make a deal without it. That even the army disagrees with. And so everybody knows that it's just an excuse, this Philadelphia corridor, not to make a deal with the hostages. Because if he makes a deal, that means the war in Gaza comes to an end. And that means there'll be elections. And that means he'll be out of office. So it's really a completely personal agenda versus the hostages and everything else going on in Gaza. That's what's outraging people.
To what extent can he hold on to power?
He can't hold on to power, but the next elections are scheduled for in 2 years. So he knows that he'll be defeated whenever he runs. So all of this, it isn't like he's hanging on so he can be in power for the next 10 years. All of this tragedy, all of this is because he wants to hang on to power for another 2 years until the next elections, and then he knows he's out. So it really is almost a tragedy on a tragedy or an absurdity on an absurdity. But that's the situation. And partly it's also because if he's out of office, he's much more vulnerable for going to jail in all the fraud trials that he's being tried for now. So it's a completely personal agenda versus everything else that's happening.
How then are the people in Israel, how are they responding to the resistance? Because, you know, as I said, they were given a deadline by him. He keeps telling everybody that, yes, no, he does. He's committed to releasing, to getting the hostages back. But to your point, you know, it's a deflection in a way. Do you think that the people are going to settle down and sort of give him room? Or do you think this can escalate?
No, this is going to, you know, it's going to escalate. The problem is, you see, he's got this coalition with this crazy right-wing coalition with, you know, Ben Gvir and Smotrich, the real fascist, I mean, outwardly fascist parties. So he's got a fairly stable coalition that he's holding on to. And they, the right wing, do not want a hostage deal because they want this total victory idea in Gaza, destroy Hamas, beat the Palestinians, settle Gaza, and that's kind of their agenda. So he's in a way hostage himself to the right wing, but he's also hostage to his own desire to stay in power. And so people have been out in the streets not only since October 7th, but they've been out in the streets, you know, for a year before that with the whole judicial reform. So for 2 years now, hundreds of thousands of people have been out on the streets. Last night, there were 300,000 people in Tel Aviv. But it has absolutely no impact on Netanyahu or the government. They don't care because again, they're not vulnerable to these kinds of pressures because the coalition is a stable one. So it's really this handful of people run by Netanyahu and Smotrich and Ben-Gvir that are running the whole country, that are refusing the hostage deals, that are continuing the war, even though the army said we've achieved our military objectives months ago. So even the soldiers that are being killed today are being killed for no reason, all because he wants to hang on to power. And that's outraging people. The country is, everybody's out in the streets, but they have no influence whatsoever on him. There's no way in which we can topple the government. It's a really crazy kind of a situation where it's the whole country against Netanyahu and his base, but they're the ones that are winning and that prevail at this moment.
What are people exposed to on media platforms? Are they seeing what's happening, you know, across the border? Are they aware? As you're saying, you know, this is not about what's happening in Gaza. This is about something else. Is it because they're naive to what's happening, or what? Just maybe distill it for us and explain what they're exposed to and why they don't see it the way the world is seeing it.
For Israelis, everything is reduced to security. It's we're a peaceful, normal people. We were attacked by these savage terrorists on October 7th. And that's it. And we have to destroy them, destroy Hamas. They're evil. And, you know, and then many Israelis, especially the right, will say, well, all Palestinians in Gaza are Hamas. So they're all, you know, fair targets. And so the genocide is taking place. But Israelis never, ever see that. You don't see here what you see on your screens in South Africa. You don't see the carnage. You don't see the human stories, the suffering. None of that. It's all you see on Israeli TV are the hostages. Mm-hmm. So you're, you know, interviewing the families and what about the hostages? And then the Israeli journalists who are embedded with the army units. So they're going in and they're saying, look how great it is. Look here, they just shot 15 terrorists. Look over there. And everything, of course, is terrorists. That's always the language. Mm-hmm. You do not see the carnage. Israelis are even surprised and outraged at the idea that they're committing genocide, because it's like something falling out of the sky, because they have no context. They have no idea of what their own government is doing and their own army is doing. And so really they're immune from it. They don't care. They don't care about Arabs. They don't care. They're all bad people. They're all terrorists. To hell with them. And all we care about is getting the hostages back.
Would you call it
That's
racist?
That's what it all reduced to. It's, well, sure, it's racist. I mean, it's colonialist. Mm-hmm. You know, we have, an apartheid system here. Mm-hmm. you know, that Israel, this is part of the reason why Gaza is going on. And not only Gaza, but the West Bank. Mm. Israel is now attacking refugee camps in the West Bank and farmers and communities in the West Bank with the same conventional military weapons that it's using in Gaza. So the West Bank is turning into another, in a way, it's Gazifying the West Bank. All of this is because Biden has said, or a lot of it is because Biden has said, when the fighting dies down in Gaza, we're going back to the normalization process, normalizing relations between Israel, Saudi Arabia, and the so-called pro-Western Arab world. Mm. And so Israel is in a rush to complete its apartheid process, to drive Palestinians off the land in the West Bank, to confine them to these little tiny enclaves in the West Bank, and to disconnect from Gaza. Israel does not want the 2.5 million people of Gaza. So it's really rushing and scrambling to get all this done on the ground so that when, in the next couple months, we go back to this process of normalization that then legitimizes and normalizes the apartheid system that Israel has imposed on the Palestinians, and the Palestinians disappear as a political force, then everything is in place. So that's why there's a huge upsurge in the military attacks on Palestinians in the West Bank, as I think, as well as in Gaza.
Were the people, and obviously we know that the Israeli citizens are literate, they are educated, most of them, were they exposed to the ICJ proceedings and the representations there? Because many of the things that you're saying, as propaganda as they are, were disputed in that process. Yeah. And so were they able to distill that? Were they able to understand that, that actually what we've been fed here by our own government is not true as presented at the ICJ?
No, I'll tell you why. Israel is a really interesting case study on how you can have an open society. You know, like you say, Israelis are very educated. We have universities. Everybody has the internet, you know, access to all the TV channels. Half the Israeli population travels abroad every year. Mm. A completely open society in every sense. But everyone is in a certain mindset. They're all thinking within these parameters. I don't know if you'd call it Zionism, but in these parameters in which this is our country, the Arabs, because we don't use the word Palestinian, the Arabs are our enemies. We're in a fight for our existence. And that's it. In other words, it's a very closed kind of a little box that Israelis are in. We're the good guys. We're fighting for our existence against bad people, period. And so in a way, as educated as you are, as much as you read, it doesn't matter. Everybody is still, that's the television, the TV news is in that box. Everything is in that box, except I would say maybe Haaretz newspaper, which is the only kind of a channel that brings something critical in. But it has very little effect. So it really is, everybody, there's a groupthink here in which the right and the left, the liberal Zionists, you know, they're all within this Zionist box, and nobody can think out of it. So when all of a sudden something happens like the ICJ decision, people just don't know what to do with it. Where is that coming from? I mean, they have no context. You know, they're almost like tourists in their own country, Israelis. We have no idea what we've done to the Palestinians. There's no concept of Nakba or colonization or occupation or house demolitions or the apartheid system that we're putting in place. Or, you know, what's happened, the suffering we've caused the Palestinians. Hmm. You know, half the Palestinian people are refugees. There is absolutely no awareness of that in Israel. So, and of course, one of the ways it keeps going is that everything begins with October 7th.
Yeah.
There's no context. You see, that reinforces everything because, you see, here are just normal kids at a music festival, and all of a sudden these murderous Arabs come and kill them and take them hostage. That's it. It's a crime. In other words, like all colonial systems, we criminalize resistance. And certainly sometimes crimes are committed during resistance fighting. But there's no political context. There's no sympathy with the Palestinians. There's no understanding of what they're going through and why they're doing these things, you see? Mm-hmm. Why this whole conflict is continuing. Those are absolutely questions that Israelis have no concept of, and they don't ask themselves. Everything is just black and white. We're the good guys. They're the bad guys. We're fighting for our existence, and we can do anything we want. Period.
And how then did Israel produce someone like you who is conscious about what's happening across the border?
Well, that's what's interesting. You see, I'm completely invisible for Israelis. Mm. Here I'm sitting in a courtyard now yelling at you on the phone and nobody cares. Mm. Because I'm outside of that Zionist box. Mm. I'm critical. I'm the head of the Israeli Committee Against House Demolition. Mm. So I'm where houses are demolished that Israelis would never see any. Mm. They couldn't imagine going out into the West Bank and being with Palestinians. Mm. So I got out of the box. But because of that, I'm invisible for them. Mm. In other words, the box includes left Zionists and right Zionists. So the argument is, should we keep the settlements? Should we give up settlements? This or that? But there's no real substantial disagreement about that Israel should be a Jewish state in Palestine and all of that. So that if I was a left Zionist, let's say in the Labor Party, mm-hmm. and I was saying this, mm-hmm. The whole world would fall down on me because they would be hearing me, you know, because I'm in their box. Mm. But being so, I mean, if I was on Israeli TV, which would never happen, and I would say, well, I'm telling you now, they would have, I mean, everybody would be speechless. They would have no idea what in the hell is this guy talking about.
Would you be safe to do that? I mean, if by chance a producer put you on?
No, I would be safe. No, I think I'd be safe. I mean, there have been attacks against people on the left. Mm-hmm. But again, there are attacks people in the Zionist left. Mm. They're the ones that are the threat. Because if you're inside that box and you're critical, mm-hmm. then you can create all kinds of cracks and divisions and discussions that people don't want to have. Mm. If you're outside the box,
you're a lunatic.
You're a lunatic. You can have your crazy opinions and you're not a danger to us. And so, I wouldn't be under any kind of threat.
Sure. How then do we get society to start thinking differently about these things in Israel?
Well, I think in a way, now I'm not South African, forgive me if I'm too simplistic or wrong, but I think you have to forget the Israeli public. Mm. Just like the ANC didn't spend its time trying to convince the whites in South Africa that the apartheid system is bad and we should change it. In my view, what the ANC did was they went to the international community. There was an anti-apartheid campaign all over the world that I was a part of. And that was their real allies were us, you know, the people abroad that supported the anti-apartheid struggle. And I think the same is true here. You're never going to get through to Israeli Jews. Never. They're simply caught in this paradigm that they can't get out of, and it'd be threatening for them even to have this kind of discussion. And so we have to forget about them. We have to get the Palestinians, I think, have to leave the struggle with a political program, and they're stuck with Abu Mazen and the Palestinian Authority, which is another story. And then they have to mobilize, like the ANC did, the international community. And the international community is mobilized. Mm. I think the Palestinian issue has achieved the level of the anti-apartheid struggle all over the world. It's become the global issue, I think. Mm. But at the same time, there has to be, you know, without a PLO, there's no real political leadership yet for the Palestinians. Yeah, and so that's where everything is kind of stuck. But the point is, forget about the Israeli Jews. They're never going to be part of this. Hmm. And even my friends on the left are, when I talk about one democratic state that I think is the way out of equal citizenship for everybody that replaces Israel, even my friends on the left think I'm crazy. So I wouldn't even spend my time. I think we have to do what you did. We have to make this apartheid system collapse in Israel, get to a transition, and then in a transition to democracy in one democratic state, then I think the Israeli Jews will have to come into it. But they're not going to be proactive allies in any way with the Palestinian struggle for liberation.
Except the clock keeps ticking and Palestinians are continually under threat and their lives are... I mean, you've seen. We know what we see every day. So, I mean, can we wait it out, you know, for the world to move? Because we know they still get funded by the US, by the UK and friends. And so... You know, $10 billion last week was approved by the U.S. Senate.
That's right.
Of weapons.
Well, and that's the issue. You see, Israel believes, with American support, that it can succeed in imposing an apartheid regime over Palestine in a way that the South Africans did not succeed in imposing an apartheid regime. In other words, Israel thinks it's sustainable, and on the contrary, they see it as happening in the next few months when this normalization process goes through. From the Israeli point of view, normalization is the end of everything. Settler colonialism ends. Mm. It can end with apartheid if you can't, you know, eliminate all the native population. You can at least, you know, like Israel is doing, confinement of Bantu stands on 15% of Palestinian land, small little islands. Have an apartheid state of a Jewish state on 85% of Palestine, and then normalize. And that's how settler colonialism wins. It normalizes. So you make peace with Saudi Arabia, with Jordan and the Gulf states and Egypt. It's recognized internationally by the United States and Europe, and Israel and Saudi Arabia and Egypt become the pillars of NATO in the Middle East, and it's over. The Palestinians are locked into their Bantustan, and they're gone. There is no more struggle. There is no more conflict because it's over. It's all been normalized. And so Israel thinks that it can succeed in imposing an apartheid regime. Israel even uses the word apartheid sometimes in a way that South Africa was unable to.
Jeff Halper, really, really appreciate your time. Thank you very, very much. He's a director of Israeli Committee Against the House Demolition, coming straight to us from Israel.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.